The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 430. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Well, my guest is a longtime independent comic book creator and a gentleman that I have tried to get on this show several times in the past, but it just seems that couldn't kind of get the stars to align. But thankfully, thanks to a little bit of help from Jay Kalagayan, I got the opportunity to sit down about a week or so ago with Mr. Tim Fuller. Now, Tim has a huge resume when it comes to comic books that he has created. From Zombie March to the Blue Beagle to Cap'n Catnip to Sham Comics, Frogman Funnies, the list goes on and on and on. And I'm even forgetting to talk about the fact that he's heavily involved with the Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities. But I'm going to let Tim talk about all of those projects, including his unique style for creating his comics, which I don't think I can do it justice. In fact, I'm not so sure I understand the full process, to be bluntly honest, but it's something that obviously when you see the finished product, you go, this is something unique. This is something that is unusual, and I got to have it in my collection. And so we're going to get to Tim here in a few moments, but I got to thank right now a great sponsor of this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They just had one of the best weekends that they've had in many, many years. Just a couple weeks ago, when on May 4th, it was Free Comic Book Day. The place was packed. Sales were great. So, you need to check out this establishment, especially if you're in Central Ohio. You have no excuse for not stopping by and seeing Jeff and all the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics. They got it all, man. They got graphic novels, they got single issues, they got collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got everything you need. They got you covered. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address, and they're very active on their Facebook page. So check them out at WG Comics. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Mr. Tim Fuller. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, I'm sitting down with Mr. Tim Fuller, the creator of the Frogman Funnies and a host of other great comics. Tim, how are you this evening?
Doing great. How are you, John?
I'm doing very well. I can't complain.
Good.
Let's talk a little bit about what I just mentioned. Your, I guess, newest book, the Frogman Funnies. Would you care to describe it to the listeners?
Frogman Funnies is an offshoot of a project I've been doing for about the last 10 years called Sham Comics, where I take Golden Age and Silver Age comics that have passed into public domain. Nobody has active copyrights on them. I find stories that I like, I scan them, I erase all the original text without ever altering the artwork, and then I write a satiric story to go with that artwork. Most of the time, I don't even read the stories as they originally were because I don't like to be, you know, prejudiced as to what the original intention was. And so then Frogman was just an outgrowth of the Sham Project. like I said, there's a bunch of sham. I've been doing those for quite a while. And in doing some research for those, I kept coming across cryptid stories here and there until I felt like I had enough cryptid material that we could do a whole issue just on that itself. And Kat and I were getting ready to do the second annual Frogman Festival. Kat had done the first year and told me about, you know, what a great show it was. And so I wanted to create something specifically to sell at that show. And so I pitched the idea to her, and she said she wanted to publish it through Corpse Flower Press, which is her imprint, where we do Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities, the ghost story anthology book. And so I came up with two Frogman stories and two Mothman stories, and then I rounded out the book with just an alien invasion story that was pretty fun. And I was very happy with the project. It sold like crazy at Frogman. People seemed to really dig it. And so in doing the research and even shopping at Frogman Festival, I was able to come up with enough comics, enough material that I think I can put together a second issue for this coming year.
Okay. Cool. You know what? I really liked the alien storyline that was in Frogman. I thought it was very, very unique. And I don't know, it made me laugh. I enjoyed Pervert from Planet X, I believe. Was one of the...
That's a movie book. That hasn't been published yet. That's
okay.
It's almost done. I'm about a quarter of the way to the end of the book. It's going to be a double feature hi-fi sci-fi collection with The Pervert from Planet X, and then you flip the book over and start again with Where Egos Collide.
Okay.
And so it's two different stories, but they're both about the end of the world, and they were really fun to work on. So once I get that done, I'm kind of between publishers at the moment, and so I was going to shop it around. If I don't find a publisher that wants to take it on, I'll do it myself.
You know what? Let's talk about Corpse Flower Press. You said it was Kat's imprint?
Yes.
So how was the experience working with Kat on this project? I assume that it was pretty solid because you both were believing in the project.
Absolutely. I've known Kat for years and years and years. I met her a long time ago at a show up in Columbus called Space.
Mm-hmm.
A small press expo show. And we became friends up there. And then she and her husband moved away for a time. And then they moved back to the Cincinnati area. And she got back into the local comic scene here. And that was sort of where the Cabinet of Curiosities, you know, kind of took root. We had this idea. We would get together, a whole bunch of us, Jay included, for, you know, like drink and draw and just, you know, dinner and kick around different ideas, show people what we had, you know, in the works. And Kat had this idea to do an anthology of local ghost stories and legends and cryptid sightings and just general paranormal stuff from the Cincinnati area. This area is rich in ghost stories and cryptid sightings and just all kinds of fascinating things. And so she wanted to do this anthology, try to use as many local writers and artists as she could. And she asked me if I'd be interested in being the art director on the project. So I'd had a lot of experience self-publishing and you know, getting books to market. So I took it on. It's really a fun job. We've got two issues right now and a third issue nearly done. We want to do a Kickstarter in the fall and then release it before the end of the year.
Well, when you mentioned the fact that you have worked with the Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities as the art director, could you let the listeners know what did that job entail?
Coordinating the printing, that's the biggest part of it, is kind of at the tail end. I put the book together. I lay it out in layout programs. Kat and I choose the stories. We work with the artists. She does most of the editorial work. but I do the actual assembly of the book and building the files and then turning them over to the printer, supervising them through the printing process. And that's the biggest part of my job. And so then because I'm so busy doing that, I just have contributed very short stories to this. I've got a one-page Frogman story in issue one, and a story that Kat wrote about the crying bridges of Ohio in issue two. That's, I think it's a three-page story. But it was really fun. And then in the third issue, I'm working with Jay Caligayan on a Grassman story. Grassman is the Ohio version of Bigfoot. he's getting a bigger reputation these days. I hear more and more about the Ohio Grassman. But Jay's take on it was there's a marketing team pursuing Grassman, and they want to hire him as the spokesperson for a medical marijuana company.
All right. Oh, man. That's unique. I like that, Tim.
It was such a great idea. I said I wanted to draw the first of them. Jay wants to take it on and do a whole book of them. I don't know if I'm going to be able to follow him onto that or not. But we did the ones that we've done so far. We did them like, do you remember the old Hostess Twinkie ads that used to appear in Marvel and DC comic books, and it would be like Spider-Man saving the day and saving the Hostess Twinkies? We created the Grassman stories like those, only he's selling edible products instead.
Okay. Yeah, I remember those old school advertisements. In fact, you know, I have to say, your artwork is fantastic. And I'm not saying that to kiss up or anything along those lines. I'm looking through your artwork in Sham Comics and with Frogman. It's got that throwback feel to it. It took me back to when I was a kid. And
oh, yeah, I love the retro stuff. But I have to point out, I don't do the artwork for Sham or Frogman or anything. But I choose the stories that I do very carefully. I like to find... I like it when I can find an artist that I really appreciate, like Wally Wood or Frazetta, rewrite one of their stories. That's always fun to work on.
Well, let's talk about Sham Comics. Did you start Sham because you felt that you needed more creative freedom? Or was it that I really want to do comics and this is my only avenue for doing that? Or was it something totally different?
It was... rather different, because I write and draw comics very conventionally. I'm everything I do is still humor, but I write and draw a book called The Zombie Marge Comics and Stories, and it's about the zombie Marge has a worm living in her head that he's kind of like her Jiminy Cricket. He tells her, you know, what not to do, and then she goes ahead and does it anyway. So I write and draw that myself in a very conventional way, although I've moved all of my stuff over to digital now. I draw on a tablet and color on the computer and all that. And then I do another book, the only all-ages book that I do. It's called Cat and Catnip and Womble the Wonder Gerbil. It's based on my very first comic sale to Charlton Comics in the late 70s. I did this thing called Cat and Catnip. And then Charlton published it, but then they promptly went out of business. And so there just was no more Captain Catnip. Then it just sat on a shelf here, and I miss it. I'd get it out every once in a while and try and reboot it myself. But I just didn't have the knack for writing the really G-rated stuff. My stuff would just take these weird satiric turns, and it just would be inappropriate for a kid's comic book. Well, I was at a show in Dayton and sitting next to Craig Boldman, who's a writer for Archie Comics mainly, but he's also worked on Superman and just all kinds of stuff down through the years. And I happened to bring up Captain Catnip. He knew the character. He had the Charlton Comics that I had done. And I said, you know, I'd really love to do some new adventures. And he said, would you let me write them? And I said, hell yeah, go right ahead. I said, give it a try and see if you like it. 2 weeks later, he handed me a script, and it was just the best. It was funny. Adults could read it and really appreciate it, but it was totally G-rated and you know, really cool for kids. And Craig has a writing style that I'd never encountered before, because Craig is primarily an artist as well. So he takes Post-it notes and draws each panel out on a Post-it note, does this little tiny hand lettering on there for, and each Post-it note is a panel, and then he sticks it up on, you know, a sheet until he's got a page of Post-it notes, and that's the layout. So that's what I get as the script. It's all broken down. It's all kind of roughed out for me. It saves me a whole lot of work. I found it's really fun to kind of work over top of Craig's, you know, thumbnails, basically. And so we've enjoyed doing Captain Catnip for the last few years. And he's got a new script in the works. He keeps teasing me with it, but he won't even tell me what it's about. So I'm hoping we'll get another Captain Catnip out soon. So I came from that background where I, you know, I worked very conventionally and I was old school. I learned how to hand letter. I did everything, you know, by hand the old way in the 70s and 80s. And then have, you know, gradually shifted everything over to computer. But I was working on a film project and I was researching public domain films. And because I wanted to do a film book based on Bela Lugosi Meets the Brooklyn Gorilla.
Okay.
And take stills from the movie and basically lay them out as a comic page with word balloons and all like that. Well, it was through that research that I discovered this wealth of gold and silver age material that was also in public domain. I had no idea this was out there. It was lots of good stuff. You know, of course, no Marvel or DC stuff of any kind. EC Comics were off limits. They maintained their copyrights. But most of the companies that were going in the 1950s were run out of business by the Comics Code Authority. They all went out of business by the end of the 50s. And so they didn't renew any copyrights in the 60s. And that's how all this stuff ended up there. And it just was, I don't know, something clicked with me looking at these stories, and I've got the idea to rewrite them and do Sham. I just called it Sham because I wanted it to be an anthology comic that I could do whatever genre I wanted to. If I was in the mood to do a Western, okay, we do a Western issue. And I can't take complete credit for the idea because I've seen other people do really, really similar things. John Lustig does Last Kiss, where he takes a bunch of Charlton art, romance comics, and he usually does just single panels and rewrites them as single panel gag cartoons. I have never seen anybody do it with the, you know, obsessive amount of detail that I put into them, because I go overboard trying to make this, you know, an artifact. I like when people look at this and they can't figure out if they're looking at an actual Golden Age comic. They think it looks familiar, but then they read it and it's like, holy cow, what are these characters talking about here? And I've also never seen anybody try and rewrite the ads the way I do. I put in all the old Golden Age ads for like Charles Atlas and Get Your Own Submarine and all this kind of stuff. And those are fun. I interrupt the stories with those ads just the way the Golden Age comics did.
I enjoyed the Even Losers Can Tell Filthy Jokes. That ad made me giggle. I like that one. Yes. That was my favorite, Tim.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. The first published version of it was, I was making fun of, I shouldn't have started the story. His name escaped me. Anyway, I rewrote it recently to be about Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
And getting Me Too'd. But yeah, that was a fun one to do because I had to edit. I had to take actual dirty jokes and edit them down so that they would fit concisely into the word balloons that I had and still be funny and still be dirty jokes.
Well, I think you hit it out of the park, to use a baseball analogy on that one, personally.
It was fun. Yeah, it's sometimes the ads are the most fun part of the book. I mean, I'll do them first sometimes and then just sprinkle them throughout the book where I need, some filler.
Do you have a favorite sham comic that you've did? Because I know, you have Bozo the Robot and you have a ton of other characters in Sham. Was there a particular favorite project that you've worked on that
What,
you're
you
like,
asking me
man?
who my favorite child is?
Absolutely. That's what I'm here for.
They all have merit. I've enjoyed every single one of them. If I didn't enjoy it, I didn't publish it. But there have been very few where I started a story because I don't make any plan. I just start the story on page one and I've got no idea where it's going to go or how it's going to end. I just kind of, it's just flying by the seat of my pants. There are very few where I've had to give up halfway through and say, I just can't make anything out of this. It started strong and it just petered out. So Bozo the Robot was, I had never heard of him. He was a 1940s character in a book called Smash Comics. It was an anthology. There was a desert adventure. There was a flying adventure. I think there was a cowboy strip. It was all these different strips. And then in the back was this weird robot, Bozo the Clown, although on the first, or Bozo the Robot. On the first couple of episodes, he was called the Iron Man. And it was very much like Marvel's Iron Man. This is what I could never figure out. He was a robot, a functioning robot that could move around on his own, but yet he had a panel in the back of his suit that could be opened. And then this guy, Hugh Hazard, would climb inside and wear him like a suit of armor and fly around. He had a propeller on the top of his head, like a beanie on a beanie hat. And that would lift this, I assume steel body up in the air and fly him around. But the thing I liked best about him was the mayhem. He was brutal to the bad guys. And of course, they didn't dwell on the violence, but he's socking normal criminals right in the face with his steel gloves. And so my version just amped up all of that violence and the consequences of it. He just essentially kills all the people that he encounters. And that kind of became the tagline that he was killing all humans one at a time.
Well, how about let's talk a little bit about some of your other projects like Blue Beagle. That was another one that seemed to be very much children friendly, but I take it that maybe that's not the case.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Blue Beagle was my second sale, professional sale in the 80s to Fantagraphics Books. They were doing, funny animals were huge at the time. Dave Sim was doing Cerebus the Aardvark and Ninja Turtles had just come on the scene and everybody was doing funny animals. And I really liked the format. I thought you could do a lot by, you could do a lot of satire and you could get away with a lot more with animals representing your ideas than you could with humans. You could sidestep a lot of kind of social stigmas with just animal characters. So when Captain Catnip kind of failed because Charlton went out of business and returned all my artwork, I was looking around for something else to do, and I discovered Fantagraphics was going to be publishing Critters. So real quick, I got the idea for the Blue Beagle, and I'd already been working on a story just for myself. I just wanted to do it. So I had a sample to send in to them, and they bought it, and it ran for a couple of years as a regular feature in Critters until Critters ended. I think it was about number 50. So every few months I was in there, did a bunch of covers for the books. Unfortunately, I was writing that myself, and unfortunately, it didn't age very well. There was a lot of political satire that just isn't really relevant today. So it's a little cringy when I read it, and you know, it's about George Bush Sr. and all the, and Nixon's a villain in it, and so it just hasn't aged well. But the artwork's pretty nice.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Tim for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs, from single issues to collections to graphic novels to toys to collectibles to hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered. So if you're in Central Ohio, you need to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And you can check them out online. WGComics.com is a web address, and they're very active on the Facebook page. Just look for at WG Comics. Where do you get your sense of humor from? Let's talk a little bit about usage. You know, satire is what you've based a lot of your books on, if not all your books on. Where does that come from?
I'm not quite sure. I grew up on a really steady diet of cartoons. So when I was really young, you know, this was the early 60s, and, you know, I was watching Bullwinkle and all the Hanna-Barbera stuff and all the Looney Tunes. From, you know, they were being shown on television from years earlier. So I was exposed to a lot of that kind of stuff. So the funny animal stuff came really natural to me, even though at a time, you know, in the early, let's say 63, 64, I kind of made the switch from cartoon comic books to, I think, first DC and then very quickly Marvel. So I was in on, you know, kind of ground floor of a lot of that Marvel stuff, buying it right off the spinner racks in the newsstand. And I was a big superhero kid for a long, long, long time. But when I wanted to do my own stuff, it felt more natural to do the comedic stuff. It was more satisfying to me to get a laugh than to, you know, for anything else. I was kind of a class clown.
And speaking of Marvel and DC, who are some of your favorite heroes?
Batman, probably number one. I was really, even in the early clunky, you know, campy era Batman, I was 10 years old and watching Adam West on TV and loving it. And I didn't care if the comic books were silly. They, you know, it was Batman. But I've followed Batman on through, you know, when Neil Adams took him over and kind of remade it, and it got serious and dark and lots more fun. And then from Marvel, I think I liked a lot of Marvel. Maybe my number one Marvel was Spider-Man. I was reading the Ditko issues and really confused, because Ditko was just odd. You know, this was the 60s. And yet it looked like all his stuff was set in the 1950s. There were beatniks and, you know, all that stuff. So when Ditko retired from Spider-Man and John Romita Sr. took over, I really, really got into it. But that said, I was a big Fantastic Four fan. Thor, anything Kirby did, I was really into.
Would you consider Jack Kirby to be an inspiration for you?
Maybe not the art, but yes, there's a stirring when I sit down and read a Kirby book. There's just something magical that happens, and he's probably the one creator that I go back to more often than any other. I mean, I don't go back and reread old Spider-Mans, but I'll go grab a Kirby and reread it anytime.
So then who has inspired you in your comics career?
Well, I'll tell you. Do you know who Von Bode is, the underground cartoonist?
I've heard the name.
He was in National Lampoon, and then he was in Cavalier magazine with the nude ladies. That was one of his outlets. So here I was as a teenager trying to sneak those in the house, mainly just to get the Bode cartoons. But At the time, there weren't widespread comic conventions. Comic conventions in the late 60s and early 70s were few and far between, and they were mostly relegated to either coast. And so when I was in high school, I would take summer trips to New York to Phil Suling's Comic-Con, which was in downtown Manhattan. And I met a lot of really cool people there, including Bodie. And he was very generous with his time. He loved talking to young fans. He gave me a lot of encouragement. He would look at my portfolio. And at the time, I had thoughts of becoming, you know, a DC artist. I liked their mystery titles. I wanted to be the next Bernie Wrightson. And so all my stuff was like this really bad Bernie Wrightson imitation. But in the back of my portfolio was all this funny stuff, like the Blue Beetle or Beagle and Cat and Catnip. And I just had a portfolio review with Carmine Infantino at DC. And it was pretty brutal. I mean, he could have been a lot worse, but he kind of let me down easy. And I was, you know, I walked out of there pretty discouraged with my portfolio in hand. And I wandered into the artist room that had been taken over by Michael Kaluta, Jeff Jones, Bernie Wrightson, and Bodie. And Bodie was in there, and we got to talking, and I was telling him about the portfolio. And he says, "Why don't you let me look at it?" And I said, "Sure, here. You know, what can I lose?" He thumbs through it all, and then he gets to the funny part in the very back, and he spends a lot of time on that, and he says, "You know, it looks like you enjoy doing this a whole lot more than you enjoy doing this." And I said, "Yeah, you're right." He said, "You should do this," meaning the cartoon work.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I kind of took it to heart. I thought, you know, he's right. I really do enjoy drawing the funny stuff more than just being kind of a Bernie Wrightson copier. And so that's really how it started. And I cite Bodie as kind of my main inspiration. But there's a whole lot of others. Basil Wolverton is a big, I'm a big fan of his. And every chance I get to do a Basil Wolverton story in Sham, always take it. And oddly enough, I was at CXC in Columbus a few years ago. And at the table next to me was Monty Wolverton, Basil's son. Basil had passed away, but Monty is a fantastic political cartoonist, and he was there for that. And I kept debating, should I show him this? Is he going to like this? Is he going to hate that I'm, you know, essentially making fun of his father's stories? But I brought it up, and I passed him a Sham, and he sat there and read it just laughing out loud. And then I said, "Well, here's another one. I've got a story in this one." I showed him three or four, and he bought them all, and he loved them and thought it was just great what I was doing with them.
That's excellent. You know, I think that was the CXC where I stopped by your table, actually, because I wanted to highlight what I thought was ingenious. I really enjoyed TV Snide. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about what TV Snide was all about?
Well, when I was in high school, I'm telling a lot of high school stories, but it all relates. TV Guide used to be a big cultural deal. It came mm-hmm. in a little digest-sized magazines. You tell kids about this, they have no idea. They look at what I've done, and they got no idea what this is. But, you know, it would come in the mail, you had a subscription to it, and you always wanted to be the first to grab the TV Guide and see what was on for the week and pick out the shows you were going to watch and, you know, when you wanted to be home and see everything. Because, you know, no DVRs, no reruns to per se. You just had to watch it when it was on and you know, hoped you caught it. So I had always wanted to do an artifact, you know, kind of my homage to a 70s era TV Guide. They always had great covers by Jack Davis, and I'm a huge Jack Davis fan. And so a few winters ago, I just got a wild hair. I didn't even really consider whether this would be commercial or would anyone else care at all about this, but I just started with Saturday. I created a document and just started typing. And every day I would do a day's worth of TV programming, all of my own. And when I got done, we looked at it and my wife and I discussed it. And she said, it's pretty funny, you know, because I wrote it in such a way that there were stories that kind of flowed through the week. If you read it all in order, you would pick up little things. There was a running gag about Sonny and Cher getting a divorce. There was a running gag about all these lawsuits against Jerry Lewis. And then it culminated in the Jerry Lewis telethon at the end of the week. And it just, and I tied all of the soap operas together. They were all different soap operas, but it was essentially one plot that just played through all of them. And I had so much fun doing it. I decided to print it and it was just a book I was going to take to conventions and just put on the table if somebody wanted it. I don't sell a lot of them, but when somebody gets it, they really get it.
In fact, you told me that probably the most challenging part of that particular project was getting the little icons that would have the number. Like if you were watching Channel 53, it would have the little box with the little 53 on there. So can you speak a little bit about how challenging that was?
That's what kept me from doing it for so long. I'd had this idea that it would be fun to do, but then I thought, how do I do those little tiny bubbles? Because they were actually little bitty TV screens with the channel number in there. And I thought, I'd have to cut those out and put those together and paste them in by hand. And yeah, that's just too much work. But I was browsing through a site called DaFont. It's all free downloadable fonts, some professional, some very amateurish. But I happened across a font that was just nothing but that. It was programmed, you know, to type in, but it was all little bubbles, either clear ones or solid black ones, and they had the channel number in there. So I downloaded that and I was off to the races, man. It was smooth sailing from then on.
Thank goodness for technology, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a few of maybe what we call philosophical ideas when it comes to creating comics.
All right.
What advice would you give a new creator if they came to you and said, Tim, I want to do this. Give me some advice. What should I look out for? What should I definitely do, not do, et cetera, et cetera?
First and foremost, I would steer them to finding their own voice. I'm no longer a huge superhero fan. It takes a really special take on a superhero to get me excited. I just read it all. But these young guys that I see, you know, coming up and doing their own thing, they get the chance to do whatever they want in a book, and they just choose to do a superhero that's really derivative. I would encourage somebody to, you know, look in their own life, find their unique perspective, and write what they know. Don't copy something that's already been done. Because at this point, most everything's been done.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like, I enjoy autobiographical comic books. I have a lot of friends that do, you know, sort of comic diaries and things out of their own lives. I really respect that. I can't do that. I can't sit down and write about myself that way. It would be horrid for anybody to read. But And the other thing I would advise them, if they're wanting to be an artist as opposed to a writer, draw, learn to draw, learn the basics, learn anatomy, learn everything you possibly can about, you know, the craft of drawing and draw constantly. That's the only way you get better.
Now, you've worked with a variety of artists, writers, various creators throughout your years. What is the one attribute you look for when you partner up with somebody? That it absolutely has to be there, or otherwise it's not going to work.
Well, I think dedication to the craft is really top. I know I've been acquainted with a lot of people that had lots of big ideas, but they never follow through with anything. And I tell a lot of younger creators who have, ideas for, 30 volume epics that they want to do. And I keep saying, you don't have anything on paper. You've not put a line to paper, but you've got all these outlines for 30 volumes of this stuff. Think of a short story. Think of 8 pages. Tell a story in 8 pages and get it done. Once you have that, there's no way to build it just planning, an epic that's never going to get completed. You need to learn the basics first, and the best way to do it is to just do it.
Okay. By the way, I like the shirt. I know fans can't see this, but I enjoy the Nancy and Sluggo shirt.
I'm going to be going to Nancy Fest at the Billy Ireland Museum in Columbus in a couple of weekends. And I bought this shirt specifically to wear there. And my, you can't see this, or your listeners can't see this either, but this is my latest project. This just came out a couple of weeks ago. It's a parody of Nancy and Sluggo called Antsy and Sucko. And I took, I had bought a bunch of Golden Age comics, just real ratty ones that I was hoping to find some stuff in. And there were a bunch of Nancy comics, which I'd never really, really read. I was familiar enough with Nancy, but I'd never given it a good read. So I started reading these ones from the 40s that I had, and they were great. They were hilarious. And then I started getting these ideas that I wanted to rewrite them in a sham format. And so I came up with the idea of doing Antsy and Sucko. And because the Nancy comics are so visual, I couldn't really change the plots all that much, but the dialogue is amazing, because I took it in a very political, un-PC way. I came across a story where Sluggo was running for president of the neighborhood. So I took that story and I rewrote it as Sucko for president, make everything great again. So it's all this MAGA stuff, and he's giving these hate-filled speeches, and he wants to move all the immigrants out of the neighborhood and get rid of all this woke nonsense. And so Antsy runs against him, she's the liberal candidate. So that was pretty fun. Then I found one where they the kids joined the police force. Never explained why. They were suddenly junior policemen. And so I rewrote all of those as the Short Blue Line. And it's very fun. There's lots of, defund the police and Blue Lives Matter stuff in there. It got really fun to do. And then the final story was about small houses. For some reason, my Facebook kicks up all these posts about small houses, and it's a thing, and it's super popular, people moving into these little teeny things. So there was a story that I could rewrite as them taking a vacation, but they end up in a small house.
All right.
And so I took that to space a few weekends ago, and it really sold well. People seem to really like it, and one of the organizers for Nancy Fest says, "Why don't you just bring a bag full of those to Nancy Fest with you, and I'll send people your way?" Because there's not going to be a dealer room or anything. It's an exhibit and talks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'll be at Nancy Fest with my Antsy and Suckos and my Nancy shirt on.
All right, before we get to our last question, let's talk a little bit about, you just mentioned a new project. Are there any others you'd like to mention? Appearances where you're going to be?
Let's see. I almost always do the Jim and Dan shows, the little Sunday shows up at Wright State University. I've been buddies with Dan forever. And so he started inviting me as a guest up there. And Craig Boldman also goes to those. So we're always side by side and we can talk cat and catnip while we're there and get a lot of business done. So I'll be doing any of the Jim and Dan shows. I just heard the other day I'm in Gem City in Dayton. I don't have any of the dates of these things. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. I think Gem City is the end of July.
I think it is. Yes.
It's like somewhere around the 24th, 25th, somewhere in there.
I'm signed up for the Cincinnati Expo, which is not going to be in downtown Cincinnati this year because Duke Energy Center is being renovated. So they're moving up north to Sharonville. So it's a smaller venue. I'm anxious to see how it's going to work out. It's got to be easier as far as parking and load in and load out, because loading in and out of Duke Energy and parking downtown, especially when the Bengals are playing or whatever. Sometimes it's on Oktoberfest weekend. So that can get a little pricey when you do that. And I'm trying to think if there's any other shows. I'm waiting to hear officially whether I'm in CXC this year.
Okay. All right. How about one final question that has little to do with comics, but what do you enjoy doing the most when you're not creating comics?
Okay. That's a good question. I raise dogs. When I retired from like real work a few years back, I wanted to foster dogs and work on dog adoptions. So we have over the years ended up adopting 4 golden retrievers, 3 of them from puppy mills. So they're all kind of, they have their own little unique emotional problems. They're sweethearts, but they require special treatment. And then about a year ago, I started full-time dog fostering for the organization where we adopted 2 of the dogs from. And so right now I've got 5 big dogs. One is just a huge puppy, and I'm working hard with her, and she really puts me through my paces because she's a year old, but no one has ever bothered to try and train her, teach her anything. So I'm starting from scratch. She doesn't even know how to shake hands or sit or anything. All she knows is her name. Her name is Stella. And so I've been trying hard to work with her. We've had her for about 2 months, and there hasn't been any interest in her. I think we've hit a time period where there are more dogs in shelters than there are people to adopt them. Mm-hmm. Because adoptions are way, way, way down. But I took poor Stella to an adoption event a month or so ago, and she didn't do well at all. She became so stressed out that she was acting out aggressively. That's the way she was showing her fear. She was snapping at people and growling at people and just going crazy. We didn't stay very long. I brought her home.
Well, I also saw you had a cat. Your cat was back behind on your...
That's the studio cat. That's Selena. We also live very close to a major highway through northern Kentucky. And it's a popular spot to dispose of cats. So we have 4 cats, 3 of whom have been thrown out on the road and made their way up into our garden. And we just took them in. So Selena is the snooty one. She doesn't like the other cats at all. And so just to keep the peace, she lives up here in my studio. She has her own private litter box and her own private food, and she doesn't have to see the others. Oddly enough, she likes the dog. She gets along just fine with all the other dogs. But the other cats, she can't stand.
All right. Well, Tim, it has been awesome chatting with you. But before we go, where can folks find you on the internet? Do you have a website, social media stuff, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes. I have 3 basic sites that I use. I have just a website that we've just renovated it to kind of bring it up to date with all the books that I have now. And so it's kind of a combination of portfolio of older commercial projects that I have, and then previews of my comics, and then links to those. So that is hoohacomics.com, hoohacomics.com. That's the main site. That will link you to the sales site, which is indieplanet.com. And they've got, I think it's over 40 of my books there right now. All the Sham stuff is there, all the Captain Catnip, all the Zombie Marge, all these little weird one-off things that I do, like the TV Snide, are there. And so my website will link to that, but it's the official address is indieplanet.com/hoohacomics.com. I think that's it. If you get to Indie Planet, type in Hoo Ha Comics, you'll find.
There you go. There you go. Stuff.
and then for a long time, I did a blog, and I was doing this project called The Daily Sham, where I would post a rewritten newspaper daily every morning on Facebook, and then I would collect them on the Zombie Marge blog. So that still exists out there, and it has a just a ton of material you can read for free.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, Tim, thank you very much for taking some time out of your night to sit down and chat with me. I really do appreciate
Thank you very much for having me. It was,
you
was
got
a
it.
Lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again maybe in the near future.
Yeah, well, are you going to be at any of my upcoming shows?
I might swing out to Gem City. I'm waiting to see what happens in July. But I've never been out there, and I hear – you know, Jay and Adam Fields and you and all those kind of Western Ohio creators always talk about how great it is. And, you know, it's not that far from
show.
Columbus.
Yeah. And they get a lot of good people in there. At last year's show, I was right beside Don Simpson, who does Megaton Man.
Yep.
And that was fun chatting with him. And then right behind us was Michael T. Gilbert, who does Mr. Monster.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, you know, I'd read all of their books, you know, a long time ago. So it was really, I never met them in person before. So it was really fun, you know, just kind of hanging out. It was a good vibe.
All right. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, again, thanks, Tim. I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Tim Fuller, talking about all his various projects from Sham Comics to Zombie Marge and everything in between. And you really need to check out what Tim's got going on. As I mentioned in our conversation, TV Snide was, for me, like the most mind-blowing project I have ever seen at the in the indie comics world. And so take it from me, you need to check out his stuff. Go over to his website. Check out all the social media and whatnot and keep tabs on Tim because he's doing some really great things in the world of comics. All right, it's now about time for me to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you'd like to do so. First off, you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can also leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts. Just search for at PVDcast. And of course, you could shoot me an email if you prefer to do so. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this great podcast. Well, tell them that they can hear it a variety of different places. You could check out new episodes over at PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. But it's also available through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting app, go into the search bar, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And don't forget, if you're listening through one of those outlets, please make sure that you rate and review. It helps me out in the algorithm and allows people to find the PVDcast without doing a lot of searching, and I would greatly appreciate it. Oh, and if you are rating and reviewing, I totally forgot to remind you that you should subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast.
And there's even a final way that you can hear every single episode of my beloved podcast. That is every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page. I do a little live broadcast. So there you go. Three easy avenues for listening to me and the PVD cast. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you one more time for checking out the episode. So I'm going to get on out of here, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.